的。
Morning, and you are in the zone on the fan. A couple hours of talk of pretty much nothing but hoops. Who's up for that, huh? As you know, you puckheads will get your chance from 10 to noon for Beyond the Pond. But for now, it's Sinekin, it's Tucker, and we're very happy to have you in the zone. All right, I've been on the air for 30 seconds. I've already lied once. Technically, Trent isn't here. He will be here. He's just running a few minutes late. Apparently, you know, you can't always predict how long it's going to take you to get to the office, right? And coming down 394, it sounds like he called me about 10 minutes ago and said, it's like I'm sitting in a parking lot on 394 right now. As he finally gets to the accident, he finds a car has spun out and hit a state trooper. That's not a great way to start your day. You know, a spin out's bad enough. Hitting another car, never good. Hitting a state trooper, that's just not good at all. So he's about 10 minutes behind schedule. We'll dance through the first segment, maybe take an early break, and then Double T will join us because there is so much to catch up on the most prolific trade deadline day in the NBA in 30 years. 14 trades, 19 teams involved. Those are both the most in 30 years. 34 players change teams. That's the second most in the last three decades. As for the Wolves, I wish I had the bumper bar with all the sound effects. I hit the crickets sounder right now because, nothing happened there. And not a huge surprise, really. The Wolves kind of stuck in this purgatory. Should they be buyers? Should they be sellers? I think on the heels of a four-game losing streak, which has seen them fall to 25-30, it's safe to say sellers would be the way to go. Unfortunately, they didn't have much appealing to sell. You'd be looking at a couple of expiring contracts that teams might want to take and maybe return for second-round draft picks, guys like Taj Gibson, Anthony Tolliver. But that didn't move the needle. Nobody apparently was too excited about that. Certainly they hung out to offer guys like Jeff Teague and Gorgui Dieng, whose contracts are not real appealing, and that's putting it mildly. Gorgui's got two more years and about, $33 million left. You'd have to forfeit multiple first-round picks to get that off your books and make another team take that kind of a contract, which wouldn't be appealing either. And Jeff Teague's got a player option next year for $19 million. And my hunch is he's going to just go ahead and sign that sucker because no one's paying him $19 million anymore. So contracts that were not very favorable, certainly for the Wolves to unload. And so they were spectators on trade deadline day, but I can't wait to get Trent's thoughts on the major moves and the major moves that didn't happen, most notably Anthony Davis, still in New Orleans and back on the court last night to play the Timberwolves. And he looked like he hadn't missed a day. I think he had missed seven games with a finger injury. Comes back 32 points in 25 minutes. 32 points. He sat the entire fourth quarter, yet the Wolves still could not take down the Pelicans in a five-point loss, which has seen their record drop to 25-30. And let's face it, out of the playoff race. I'm officially calling it today. Probably could have called it the day Jimmy Butler requested a trade, that that's it for the Wolves' playoff hopes of getting back to the postseason for a second straight year. Just to put it in perspective, 25-30, there's 27 games left. You figure you got to get to, I think the magic number we thought before the season was 47 wins. 47 wins puts you in the conversation to get to play the Warriors and get swept in four games as the eighth seed. To get to 47 wins, the Wolves would have to go 22-5. You get where I'm going here? So, playoffs, it's one of those deals. It's not happening, obviously. It's not happening. And so, at this point, you know, you're going to look at probably drafting somewhere between 10-14, most likely. 9-14, somewhere in there. And I can't wait to talk to Trent about this. I mean, how do you evaluate Ryan Saunders at this point? You know, and that's obviously the question for Glenn Taylor. It's difficult when you inherit the situation Saunders did, and on top of that, the injuries that have just mounted, and they don't seem to end. Robert Covington has the worst bone bruise in the history of bone bruises. There's not even a timetable for when Covington will return. Tyus Jones has missed 10 games with a sprained ankle. 10 games. With a sprained ankle. Derrick Rose has missed 5 of his last 6 with a sprained ankle. There was no Jared Bayless to bail out the Wolves. Jeff Teague did return and actually looked pretty good in 17 minutes off the bench. But let's put it this way. This is the state of the Wolves right now. The two biggest minute producers last night were Towns and Wiggins, 33 to 35 minutes each. The next two most minutes played by Wolves were Isaiah Kanan and Luol Deng at 31 minutes apiece. Deng didn't get off the bench for 2 months. And, you know, good for him that he's out there. He's getting some playing time. But when Isaiah Kanan and Luol Deng are among your league leaders in minutes, or team leaders in minutes, things aren't going real well. And the Wolves, despite no AD in the fourth quarter, fell last night 122 to 117, their fourth straight loss. They're 0-3 on the road trip. And two games left before the merciful All-Star break will hopefully give the injured players a chance to get back as we welcome in the professor of Hoopology, Double T, Trent Tucker, who I'm glad to hear you were not involved at all with the little pileup on 394. And actually, 5-6 minutes, that's not bad.
Yeah, it was, you know, when I first got up there, it was like a parking lot.
Yeah,
traffic was stopped. No one was moving.
Then yeah. Saturday morning, what's going on?
Right, right. And then by the time I was able to crawl just a little bit, someone had run into the back of a state trooper.
Yeah, that's just a bad way to start
your day. Yeah, that's a really bad way to start your day.
You know, and obviously the snow's cleared, but back to that icy situation.
Yeah.
It's freezing out if you're still in bed or haven't left the house. It was 10 below and I was driving in about an hour or so ago. So it might look all fine, but it's a little scary.
It's shaky out there. You know, yeah. If you're driving, slow down.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll catch you up, Trent, just briefly started off with quick thoughts on the trade deadline and the fact that the Wolves were not involved and not a huge surprise. There's not much for them to offer. They're sort of caught between do they want to sell, do they want to buy? And my take is at 25-30, they'd have to go 22-5. The rest of the way to get to 47 wins, which I think is our magic number. So I think we can safely say the playoffs are not in this team's future, and I feel like once Jimmy Bucket said I'm out, that pretty much ended the playoff conversation, most likely because of what it did to this season. But what do you do now? With 25 games left, a banged-up team that's, we don't know if we've got a GM or a coach for next year. I mean, this organization is in this weird situation right now. In the last 25, 27 games, you know, what as fans, what do we hope for? What do we look for as this team prepares to deal with the All-Star break and then beyond?
Well, you 4 games out of the number 8 spot, 4 or 5 games out of number 8 spot.
Yeah, but also like 4 teams too.
Well, I mean, you know, you have to continue to play. You know, you still have your best 2 players who are still healthy, and that's a good sign for you. But it's bad. You know, it's a bad sign for you when you lose a game like you lost against the Memphis Grizzlies, being down by 19 in the first quarter. That should not have happened.
Correct.
Then you go into a situation last night where Anthony Davis does not play in the fourth quarter. You had an 18-point lead somewhere in the first half. Yeah. All of a sudden, they were able to erase that 18-point lead late in the second quarter to tie the game up at halftime. You know, you're just going to have to step up and play. You know, you're they're going to have to find someone else who can come in and provide some consistent offense before this thing is all said and done. I mean, you're not so far out where you can't make a run. One good week for you, one bad week for some of the teams that you're chasing. All of a sudden, now you find yourself one or two games out, but maybe with 15 or 20 games still left to play. So there's still a lot of season left, you know, for the Wolves to take on. They just have to approach it the right way.
The Pelicans fans were in the same situation Wolves fans were in early in the season when Jimmy Butler, after the trade demand, was booed pretty lustily by Wolves fans for a while. Anthony Davis faced that for the first time last night. It was pretty surreal to hear him introduced and booed. Every time he touched the ball the first few minutes, he was booed at the foul line. Now, when he made baskets and when he scored the first couple hoops, crowd went crazy, you know, and it was quickly forgotten. But that's a really odd and strange situation that the Pelicans find themselves in. I'll get your thoughts on it, but first let's head to Kansas City because Paul has some thoughts on the Pelicans' unibrow as well. Paul, good morning. You're in the zone.
Good morning. I hope you're being careful on that ice up there. We got ice down here too, but not as bad as you. But I was going to question about Antoine Davis. That Boston, it seemed like they had some intriguing trade scenarios, and they would combine Irving with Antoine Davis if he sits there for the rest of the year, and then they trade him in the off season. Your thoughts on him going to Boston?
Yeah, thanks for the call. We'll call him Anthony instead of Antoine, just for our purposes. It was a weird week for Anthony Davis and for the Lakers, too. We're going to talk, coming out of the break, about the trade deadline and some of the big moves that certainly took the Eastern contenders, all the contenders except for Boston, got, I think, immeasurably better with big additions. The Lakers supposedly dangled some combination, if not all, of Kuzma, Ingram, Ball, multiple number one picks, and that wasn't enough for the Pelicans. And I think I said it last week. I didn't think they would make a deal before the deadline just to make LeBron the Lakers happy. There's no, I mean,
that was your call. Yeah, you were right about that.
So many things can change. Right now we're figuring Boston's going to offer the best situation, but what if the ping pong balls, you know, allow the Knicks to get the number one pick, for example, and the Knicks offer up that pick, you know, along with whatever other players.
With who? They're going to need three or four.
Well, they got some, you know, if you like Dennis Smith, you like Kevin Knox, some of the young pieces they put together, and you can get them, maybe a Zion Williamson as a centerpiece in the draft. I'm not saying that's going to be the best offer, but I'm just saying until all things shake out, Pelicans are liable to get a lot of people bidding for Davis's services. So I don't blame them one bit. As strange as the next 30 games are going to be for that organization, where they will not, like Davis will not play tonight. He's not going to play in back-to-backs. They're going to limit his minutes, but they are not going to sit him because the NBA has already said you sit him, and we're going to fine you $100,000 per game.
So that, they can play in, what, 5 minutes?
Well, no, I think they're going to be ethical about it. You know, 25 to 30 minutes, I think, is what you'd probably expect a night, and I think that's fair.
I think it's unfair.
You
I
do?
Really do. I think it's unfair to the guys he's playing with.
All right, well, we have to break. Let's get your thoughts on that. Because it's a very touchy situation, and certainly I can see both sides of the coin for sure. We'll expand on the situation and talk about the trades that went down on a very, very prolific trade deadline day when we return in the Zone on the Fan.
You're in the Zone with Dave Sinekin and Trent Tucker on the Fan.
All right, we are back, 8:19 on a Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us in the Zone on the Fan. Trent Tucker and Dave Sinekin with you until 10 o'clock. As always, we'll pass the puck to the boys beyond the pond at 10 for your hockey chatter. And then Saturdays with Sauce, keeping it live and local at noon. on the Fan today. They will lead into Gopher basketball, Gophers and Spartans. Good luck is all I can say to your alma mater, the Gophers, who have to go to East Lansing to face a Spartan team that has dropped three straight. Hold on, producer Trent's got a point.
Yeah, just wanted to give you a programming update. Actually, Beyond the Pond's going to lead into Wild at New Jersey.
Oh, it's a Wild game.
Yes, there is a Wild game. They're at New Jersey. Puck drops at noon. We're going to have 11:45 pregame, but you can find the Gophers game on AM 1130 K-Talk.
Beautiful. Thank you for that.
Hey. Yep.
Shocking that I didn't know the Wild schedule, isn't it?
Just yeah, yes. I can't believe shocking. That. I am so blown away.
It's usually appointment TV
right.
for me.
So
we'll talk plenty of Gophers in Big Ten basketball, but not only do they have to go to East Lansing to face a Spartans team that has suddenly dropped three straight, they're the only team Indiana can beat in the Big Ten. Indiana, in their last nine games, has beaten one team, Michigan State at East Lansing.
I just felt like last week that Indiana was going to play well, you know, in East Lansing.
Oh my God.
For some reason.
Why? You texted me. You did.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. And we'll talk plenty of Gophers. But what makes things even tougher than facing a Spartans team dealing with a three-game losing streak is they are honoring the 40th anniversary of the 79 national champs today.
Where Magic be in the house.
Breslin Center. Magic, Kelser, Vincent, Berkovich, Charles, the whole starting lineup will be there, among other former Spartan greats. I think Mateen Cleaves, Draymond Green might stop it. Who knows? But it's going to be a festive atmosphere and just a hornet's nest for your Gophers.
It's a great place to go. As a road team, all the festivities, everybody's having a good time. It's a perfect time to go in there with the right mindset.
And break the balloon.
And break the balloon, man. Spoil the party, baby.
Well,
you know, if the Gophers can
they're 14-point underdogs.
But. You can get off to a good start. I mean, I saw a team come in Minneapolis, 17-point underdog, and spoil my football season. But I won't go there. But you get off to a good start. It's a team that has lost three games that you're playing against, for sure. You know, they're going to be eager. They're going to be hungry. You know, they want to get off this three-game losing streak, for sure. They would not have a ton of confidence to start this game out. Michigan State would not. Because when you lose three games in a row, you know, things are shaky.
Question things a bit.
Yeah, you start to question yourself just a little bit. If the Gophers can get off to a good start, and the way they have to get off to a good start will be on the defensive end. They're going to have to get out in transition if they can and see if they can get some easy baskets early to get themselves into the basketball game. And that should or could help their shooting the rest of the way if they can get off to a good start.
All right, much more on the Gophers and the Big Ten as we get through the program today. But I want to come back to where we left off last segment as we were talking about the uncomfortable Anthony Davis situation. He's on the team. They did not move him before the trade deadline. They will most certainly move him sometime this summer, most likely after July 1st. That's when the Celtics can become players. But you made the point that you think it would be unfair for the Pelicans to sit Davis as far as his teammates are concerned. Why don't you expand on why you think that?
Well, because he's a part of the team. And we're still trying to win basketball games. I know that, you know, that right now the playoff situation doesn't look good for us, you know, but where we sit, you know, one great week, you know, of basketball for us, and as we mentioned, a bad week for some of the teams that we're chasing, all of a sudden now we find ourselves right back in the playoff hunt. If you're gonna keep him on the team, it's only fair to the guys that he's playing with that you go out and try to win basketball games.
All right, that sounds good. I understand it. They are 25-31. They're actually a half game worse than the Wolves. So they, too, would need to put some kind of a 22-4 type of a season together to get to 47 wins. They traded their third best player, I'll say, after Davis and Holiday. They traded Nikola Mirotic to the Bucks. We'll talk about that move. They got 4 second-round picks. They didn't even get a number one in return. They got 4 number twos, so they did unload one of their better players. But it is. I understand. I agree with you. He should play. I get
it. No doubt about it.
However, they know they are going to be moving him for a windfall of assets, right, in the offseason, whether it's Jason Tatum, a couple other Celtics, and a bunch of number one picks, whether it's the number one pick and some players from the Knicks, whether the Lakers get back into the game. If he rips his, and look, he's been injury prone, right? I mean, he has not been a very consistent player as far as staying on the court. Just work with me here for 1 second.
I'm with you.
Let's say he snaps his Achilles his next game, and he's out for 12 months. Well, now they cannot trade him. He will just walk away as a free agent in a year and a half. and they'll get absolutely nothing. So if you're looking at the best interests of the Pelicans' future, you don't let him play again until you move him, because there's no chance he gets hurt if he doesn't play, unless he's like John Wall and slips at home and tears his Achilles, which I guess could happen
for sure
to anybody.
Happen. Right.
But Trent,
he's going to practice.
I understand what you're saying as a player. I get it. Those teammates, they don't even know if they're going to be in the league next year. This might be their only chance to play in the NBA. They want one of the top five players to play, and he looked as dominant as ever last night despite the long layoff. But from the Pelicans' standpoint, by not playing him, they protect an asset that's going to bring them whatever comes back for their next 5 to 10 years. So I understand the motivation to consider benching him. The league has basically said that's not happening, but they will be very careful with his minutes, and they will not play him in back-to-backs, and I think that's fair.
I totally disagree with that.
Okay.
Because he's a player. He's a player. He has, what, another year and a half left on his contract after this season? You know, it's just unfair to the other guys on that team who go out there and work hard every single day, you know, to see if they can win basketball games. They lay it on the line for the organization. And for you to have to make a decision now, you know, to deny us an opportunity to win because you have another agenda, I just think that's unfair. That is bad for pro basketball.
Is it fair for Anthony Davis to say trade me because I'm not sticking around a year and a half before his deal?
Anybody can say trade me. You don't have to trade him, but it's unfair to the other guys on the team not to play him. I just think it's unfair.
Well, and I get it.
Because you send the wrong message. You're upset with players when they decide not to play. We criticize them for not playing. Okay, everyone said that Kawhi Leonard may not have been hurt. It was a bad thing that he did in San Antonio. But what about the other 11 guys who are out there, or 12 or 13 guys, who are out there every day working hard, doing what they're supposed to do, trying to win basketball games, showing up and doing the right things on a daily basis? And now just because you're looking to the future, I understand, I get that. But it's unfair to those other guys who are playing with Anthony Davis.
I hear you. It's also unfair to the season ticket holders.
For sure.
The fan base and all that. But if you were the GM of the Pelicans,
I would play him.
And if he tears his ACL in March?
It happens. Okay? Because I'm still in the business, believe that I can win. Okay? Anthony Davis is not going anywhere for the next year and a half. Okay?
Well, he is. He's going to go somewhere this summer.
He may not.
Oh, he absolutely will.
Okay, so but it's a possibility. You know, what if nobody gives you anything that you want in return?
They're just going to play him next year and let him walk away for nothing.
But, you know, it could happen. It really could happen.
Right, but every time this happens, the player always gets moved.
But I know, but it could happen.
Okay.
It could happen. Yep. Because the team said, well, he's only going to be here for, what, a year? Okay, I give you 4 second-round draft picks. Or I give you one of the guys off the bench. Why should I break up my team knowing that the guy's not going to be here for the future? See, the other guy also has to realize, you know, that, sure, I can get Anthony Davis for a year. Maybe I can convince him to stay. Toronto has taken that gamble with Kawhi Leonard. I get that.
Yep.
You know, but is Boston really, really, really willing to break up their team for 1 year for Anthony Davis?
Why not? They're fifth in the East. They're not going anywhere right now.
They're fifth in the East. So you're going to tell me Boston is not going to make a strong run during the playoffs this year?
Well, they
don't
might.
Believe that.
Well, no, I think they might, but I think there's 3 teams better than them right now. I'll take Indiana out of the mix, even though they have a better record. But I think the Bucks, Raptors, and Sixers are all playing much better basketball than Boston
right now. Yeah. I mean, a lot of teams played better than the Cleveland Cavaliers at this time last year.
Yeah, but they didn't have LeBron.
And who got to the NBA Finals?
But they didn't have LeBron.
And who did Cleveland beat in the Eastern Conference Finals? The Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Kyrie Irving.
I'm pretty sure the Pelicans and Danny Ainge have had conversations like, just hang out.
I totally think it's totally unfair. I mean,
he's playing. I mean, the league has basically stepped up and said, you will play him.
But not to play him last night in the fourth quarter, to me, that was bad business.
He had to rest his finger. He hadn't played in three weeks.
How many points did he score last night?
He had 32 points in 25 minutes.
They didn't, you know, yeah. Go out and win the game, man.
They did.
They won the game, but To the teammates, to the guys on that team, that's bad business.
8:29, we'll step away, come back, and talk about some of the big trades that were made at the deadline. And it was a record-setting day, at least in the last 30 years, for a number of trades, 14 of them. Several stood out and made what I think is going to be the most compelling Eastern Conference playoffs since the heyday, maybe, back in the 80s and 90s. We'll chat about those big deals when we return in the Zone.
You're in the zone on The Fan.
We're back. 8:35 on a Saturday morning. You're in the zone. Tucker and Sinekin talking hoops. And as we said, heading into the break, 14 trades made on trade deadline day involving 19 teams and 34 players. The three biggest moves all involve the Eastern contenders. And Trent, I'm going to ask you, of the three trades, which one had the biggest impact on a team that's trying to, you know, make hay and catch the Bucks, who right now lead the East.
Bucks
at 41
and
13.
Fear the deer?
Fear the deer, baby. They're 41 and 13, best record in basketball. They've won six in a row. So the Bucks add Nikola Mirotic, the Raptors add Marc Gasol, and the Sixers add Tobias Harris. To you, which of those three deals is going to have the biggest impact on a team come postseason?
I think Marc Gasol could have the biggest.
Really? He'd come in third for me in that grouping. Explain.
And the reason I say that, because come playoff time, let's say if he's coming off the bench and some of your frontline guys up front who are not playing well, now you can turn to a veteran guy who's 33, 34 years of age, who has a lot of playoff experience. You can trust him, you know, as you go deep into the playoffs. So he's going to give you that added experience, but also a guy who can perform under pressure. So to me, I think if Toronto found themselves in a situation where some of their starters were not playing well, I'm talking about at the 4 or 5 position, you could easily slide someone in like a Marc Gasol, and you wouldn't fear of a big drop-off.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a great pro, former defensive player of the year, dying to play in big playoff situations. He's got to be excited. As weird as it might be to leave that organization after so long, to head to a Toronto team that certainly is poised to make a run at the finals, has to be exciting for him. And how he fits with Ibaka, Siakam, and the big guys there remains to be seen. But as you said, bring him off the bench, he'll be fine with it, and then you can run that whole second team through whatever he does.
And like I said, in come playoff time, you know, and when the rotations begin to, you know, to tighten up, you know, who do you trust? And if you have someone like a Marc Gasol, who you can play in the last 3 or 4 minutes, and he's just as good as the guys who are starting, you know, that's a major bonus for you.
The interesting thing about these moves is that all these big-time players who are moved are free agents to be, and so all these Eastern contenders are going to have lots of big decisions to make after the season. They're all making a run for it right now. And for Philadelphia, Trent, to get Tobias Harris, for Wilson Chandler, and a couple number one picks, I mean, it's a good move for the Clippers, who are looking to move out players to make a run at Kawhi, Durant, whoever they can bring in from the free agency pool to try to acclaim part of L.A. next season. But you look at what the Sixers have now. I don't know much about depth, and they did make some small moves to get guys like Jonathan Simmons, James Ennis, because their bench looked really bare after this deal. But you look at a starting five right now with Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, and J.J. Redick. That's the best starting five in the East. I don't even think it's close. And
Are they all averaging like 16 points a game or something like that?
Well, probably. I mean, you know, Harris in his first game last night, I guess he couldn't wipe the smile off his face just playing with that team. He had 14 points and 8 rebounds, and we'll see how the chemistry works. We'll see if Jimmy Buckets is happy and all that.
And his boy came along with him, Boban, right?
Yeah, Boban joined him as well to that team. That Sixers starting lineup, though, Trent, that's a big four. And then J.J. Redick, who is not among the big four, he had 34 points last night, went 6 for 7 from three. And when you're going to get that kind of production out of Redick, along with those four stars, that team's going to make some serious hay come postseason.
Well, you talked about the chemistry, and for sure, you know, J.J. Redick now becomes even more important because he's going to be the one guy that the defense may forget about, because you have the concern about the other four guys you mentioned. And now he's going to have a lot of space to get off his three-point shot. And if he continues to shoot well, for sure, the Sixers become a much dangerous basketball team.
Now, you know, will they re-sign Harris? Will they re-sign Butler? If they lose Butler, it might give them a better shot at keeping Harris, and that takes some of the sting out of losing Butler after giving up the nice pieces they did to Minnesota earlier in the season.
Are they protecting themselves?
I think they kind of are.
No, knowing that, you know, Jimmy Buckets could move on to go somewhere else, now you still have Tobias Harris.
Exactly.
You know, J.J. Redick only signed a one-year deal as well.
Right.
And with Ben Simmons at the point and Joel Embiid down low, you know, you're going to need some guys who can spread the floor. Tobias Harris is a good spot-up shooter from the three-point line. But J.J. Redick is the guy that they need to show consistency on a nightly basis, you know, from downtown.
Following that deal, the Sixers then shipped out former number one overall pick Markelle Fultz to Orlando and got a number one pick back to get some future assets
back.
But
they saved themselves with that.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I think if they could do a do-over, they probably would have drafted Jason Tatum, and then look out. What kind of a team do they have? It's crazy when you look back at what one or two failed draft picks can mean. But they did give themselves some kind of future protection there. Then there was the Bucks getting Nikola Mirotic from the Pelicans, as I said, basically for 4 second-round picks, and the kid they got from the Thon Maker deal with Detroit, Stanley Johnson, former Arizona Wildcat. To me, home run for the Bucks, a home run. Now, Mirotic is a rental player. He'll be a free agent, and my guess is he'll move on. But for this postseason, this is a chance for Milwaukee to go for it. And they, as I said, they have the best record in basketball. They've won 6 in a row. Mike Budenholzer has been the home run coaching hire of the offseason for what he's done for Giannis's game and the way John Horst, the GM, has added pieces to complement Giannis this offseason. The Brook Lopez addition has paid huge dividends as he's turned his game into he's a whole different player now as a three-point shooter.
Right?
Exactly. They spread the court now and allow that middle for Giannis to do his thing because teams have to account for Brook Lopez. Now they're going to have to account for Mirotic, who's not only one of the best three-point shooters. I read this yesterday. He's one of the best deep three-point shooters, 25 to 29 feet. He's one of the top two shooters in the league from that distance. Not only do you have to get out and cover him, you have to get out deep and cover him, and that's just going to open things up more, not just for Giannis, but for the nice ball handlers like Brogdon and Bledsoe. Then you got the all-star Middleton. Milwaukee kept pace with what Philly did and what Toronto did.
It was definitely a nice pickup for them.
If they hadn't done that, I think the conventional wisdom would have been, well, Philly and Toronto have really upgraded, and you can't forget Boston. But I think what Milwaukee did was assure themselves that they are going to be a player in. You know, you talk about who can challenge Golden State, and usually the conversation is, all right, well, who in the West is best ready to give Golden State a run? This year, I don't think you can say that. This year, you can say, you know what, there's a few teams in the East, and I get it. Golden State's the overwhelming favorite, and they'll likely plow through whoever comes out of the East, but it's a different story. When you get to the semifinals this year, and let's say it's 1 versus 4, let's say it's Milwaukee-Boston in one series, and Toronto-Philly in another, I'm going to be riveted, not just because I'm a Bucks fan, I'm going to be riveted to those series because those are 4 really quality teams, and again, you don't know about health for anybody, but if everybody's healthy, whoever comes out of the East is not going to just look as a pushover for Golden State. Yeah, Golden State's going to be hugely favored, but any of those teams, I think, can make it somewhat interesting, don't you?
Well, they could, I mean, but you have to look at the experience factor as well, and you know, Boston, you know, to me at this stage, along maybe with Toronto, would have the most experience in terms of their star player, you know, playing at that level and at that time of the season. When you talk about Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, he's won the NBA championship with the San Antonio Spurs, you know, and Kyrie Irving also took that run with LeBron James. So your star players are guys who can set the tone at playoff time because they've been there more times than not. They understand what it's all about. And then they're able, you know, with their talent, you know, to make the right plays at the right time to give you a chance to be successful.
It'll be weird, though, first time in, what, 8 years that LeBron's not going to be in the finals? It's going to be strange.
You counted him out already?
I have counted him out.
You're saying the Lakers are not going to make it happen?
I do not count on the Lakers this season.
Well, if LeBron James stays healthy for the rest of the season, I believe the Lakers will be a playoff team. for sure.
Well, that eighth spot, which the Clippers now hold, is definitely available.
Well, they could slide to the seventh spot as well.
The Clippers?
I mean, the Lakers.
Oh, the Lakers?
Yeah, yeah.
They're 28 and 27, I believe. So they're about three games behind the Spurs for the seventh spot.
Right.
Even still. Lakers, Nuggets, 7-2.
I would, if you tell me right now, a healthy LeBron James with the Lakers as they are against the Nuggets. That's not a shoe-in for the Denver Nuggets.
Well, I hear you because you can never count LeBron out. But Denver is hanging out of the two seed, playing without Gary Harris, playing without Paul Millsap. Two of their four best players are not even playing, and they're still hanging out number two.
I was saying that Denver against the Lakers in a first round matchup, 4 out of 7 with the health of LeBron James. You know,
you got to see it to believe it. Right?
I'm saying that Denver's not good enough to win, but you know, that's not a walkover for the Denver Nuggets.
All right,
that would not be a walkover, I should say.
Let's head to the zone lines down to Apple Valley. We go. Johnny joins the program. Good morning.
Hey, hey guys.
Hi.
To Trent's comment about setting a bad message about resting guys or not playing guys, that's exactly the reason why pro sports for me in basketball, that whole ledge of if you don't do this, I'm going to do that. And Jimmy Buckets when he was here, for me, that's just a turnoff. You know, back in college when you got the red shirt, well, you can't play a guy. That's one thing. But now if he's there, play him. And the same thing there of, I don't know, it's just, maybe it's just a statement on pro sports in general. But I go along with Trent on that. If he's able, play him. That's why I paid the ticket. So. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And I get it, totally. I mean, if I'm a Pelican season ticket holder, I want to watch Anthony Davis these last 25 games. But if I'm the owner of the team and I'm looking at selling tickets the next 5 years.
Well, then send him home. Send him home. You're done for the year. We're just going to pay you. We're going to send you home. We just sit at home, do whatever you want to do. You are not welcome here anymore.
Well, but the league has basically said you cannot do that. We will not allow you to do that. Because it's
detriment to the team
and the league, right? You can't do it. If he's healthy, he plays.
You can send him home.
Well, they'll be fined $100,000 a game if they.
Now they say if they sit him and don't play him, they can send him home.
Well, it's the same thing, right?
Right. He's injured. You send him home.
Well, you can't just.
He's detriment to the team. This is a bad situation for us at this stage. This is a bad working environment for both parties involved, and we're just going to send him home.
I am, as much as it doesn't sound like it, I am agreeing with you here that you have to play him, but it's a very unusual situation because by playing him, there's really no upside besides you're going to keep your fans happy and your teammates happy because you're not going to reach the playoffs. You are going to move him, and if he's not 100%, then the return is going to be diminished from what it could be.
Don't your fans keep you in business?
If he's healthy. Well, the fans, yeah, they pay everybody.
You know, aren't they, you know, shouldn't they be rewarded? You know, for paying their hard-earned money to watch Anthony Davis play. Well, I understand that you guys have a little situation going on here or there, but don't punish us. Figure it out.
If Davis was more cat-like, and Cat set a record, it really surprised me to hear earlier this week, the first player since 70-71 to start his first 300 games, I think, without missing a game. If Davis was more cat-like and was dependable health-wise, it wouldn't be an issue. I don't have the stat in front of me, but he's missed a lot of time via injury. And a lot of big guys obviously deal with that. And so you are rolling the dice a little bit because if he gets a major injury, all bets are
okay,
off.
Okay, so what's the likelihood? Okay, well, we're not going to play in 35 minutes. We're going to play in 25 minutes. But you can get hurt in 25 minutes.
You can. But
right?
But yes, of course. But you're lessening your chances. If
he went up, he went up last night and a guy almost and Wiggins almost went up under him.
Yeah, he landed weird. On that play, I actually watched.
So if you're so afraid of him getting hurt, send him home.
Well, like I said, you can't do it. The league has already told them you cannot do that. You can't send him home.
You can't do it. They just fine you $100,000 for the rest of the season.
No, $100,000 per game.
I said $100,000 a game for the rest of the season.
So that's about $2.5 million.
So what's that?
I guess that's not much.
There you go.
Well, Loomis or whoever the owner is.
Benson, right?
Yeah, Benson, the family.
A billionaire, right?
What's $2 million? It's nothing.
There you go.
Matt, Brooklyn Park, good morning. How are we doing this morning?
Morning, guys. You know, you guys, I couldn't agree more with actually both of you on this. Dave, Dave, thank God you just said, because I never hear anybody talk about Anthony Davis's injury history. As far as I'm concerned, I know he's great, but he gets hurt all the time. I play FanDuel DFS, so you have to keep up on the injuries and stuff. He is always hurt. But, Trent, I totally agree with you as well. This is a horrible look for the NBA. As far as I'm concerned, thank God for college basketball like Duke, Virginia today. Can't wait for that one. But I totally agree. This is terrible. Adam Silver has to hate this kind of stuff. So I totally agree with you guys there. And the second point, actually two, isn't it time for Danny Ainge to stop listening to how great of a team he's assembled? And he has. There's no question about it. Mike Wilbon on PTI always says that he swindles teams. And instead of standing pat to do something with this before it's too late, second of all, I think it's a foregone conclusion. Everybody thinks Golden State's going to win. But do you guys think the NBA will be saved by the Eastern Conference playoffs? I think they're going to be fantastic with all these teams, Boston. I think any one of those four, Toronto, Boston, and Philly, and Dave's Bucks could win it all. So that's what I'm thinking. What do you guys think? Have a great weekend.
Yeah,
all
right. Thanks, Matt. We chatted about that a bit already. And the team we left out, the third-place team in the East right now, is the Indiana Pacers. I don't think we're talking enough about, is it Nate McMillan? No, it's your guy.
Yeah, Nate McMillan.
Is it Nate?
Yeah.
Coaching that team, and they lost their best player in Victor Oladipo, and they're going to replace him now with Wesley Matthews, who's being bought out by the Knicks and is going to go to Indiana, and that will help them. But the fact that Indiana is 36-19, that I don't think they're getting any play nationally for what they're doing. Everybody talks about the other four teams and how great they are, but it just, again, speaks to what Matt just said. For so many years, Trent, we'd sit here on Saturdays during playoff time going, can we just move past the Eastern Conference playoffs and get to the Eastern Conference finals? Because who wants to watch these series? And yeah, the bottom right now, the 6, 7, 8 teams in the East are Brooklyn, I think Charlotte and Miami. And Brooklyn's been a nice story, 29-28. But none of those three teams are expected to make much of a push to spring a first-round upset. Once you get to that semifinal round, those four, whoever four teams survive, and if it's the four that we think will, Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, and Boston, I can't wait for that. Now, that's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the teams at the top other than Boston. You know, they made some significant moves at All-Star, I mean, at the trade deadline to better themselves and to give themselves a greater chance to find success come playoff time. It's what some of the old teams used to do, you know, 25, 30, 40 years ago. You know, they would look at the competitor to see exactly what he was doing to counter that. I remember when Boston had to make the move to get Dennis Johnson, they said, hey, we need someone who can try to contain Andrew Toney come playoff time. We're not making this move for the regular season because Bird, McHale, and Parrish, Larry Bird is going to do enough by himself in the regular season to put us in a situation where we may have home court advantage in game number 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Philadelphia 76ers. Now we have to make a move to have someone who can defend Andrew Toney in game 7.
Yeah, and it worked out pretty well.
And that's how you have to think if you're one of those top teams, you know, because going into every season, I sit down and talk to Magic Johnson, and he said he was always looking, you know, at the Eastern Conference team, so he thought, you know, other than Boston, that may have a chance to make the NBA Finals to see exactly what they were doing so the Lakers could counter.
How shattered do you think Magic is that he couldn't swing the big deal before the trade deadline?
It's a tough deal for him right now because it was in the public and many people was talking about it and the Lakers went all in. You know, they pushed all their chips to the middle of the table and nothing came out of it. But I still believe that if LeBron James stays healthy, you know, the Lakers can make the playoffs and that would be a good thing for them this year for not making the playoffs over the last 4 or 5 or 6 years. You know, but going forward, you know, after this season, you know, they're going to have to make a splash. And if they cannot get one of those top-flight free agents to come to L.A. to play with LeBron James, that's a bad deal for Magic Johnson.
Yeah, and look how ugly it was earlier this week where LeBron was sitting by himself on the bench and all the other players were several seats away. They're getting waxed by 40 points. And you got young players, good young players in Kuzma and Ingram and Ball who have heard their names mentioned, like, we're going to move these guys out to make room for Anthony Davis. I mean, every guy's different on how they handle something like that. But when you're 21, 22, 23, and you think you're going to be with the Lakers and playing with LeBron, and now, without even a thought, they're willing to move you to New Orleans, that's got to be difficult, don't you think, for those young guys
to
handle?
For sure, yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, we don't ever think about the feelings of, they're millionaires, they're all-stars, whatever.
It's the part of the game.
You're just a product.
But it's what you signed up for.
Yeah.
And once you understand that with college basketball and pro basketball, for sure, now is a business, and once you can adapt that mindset, then it's much easier, to deal with the things that take place.
Lots more to come in hour number two. More NBA and Wolves conversation. We'll look at the all-star rosters. Did LeBron fleece Giannis? We'll talk about that. I want to get Trent's thoughts on Maya Moore's decision announced earlier this week. And then plenty of Big Ten discussion as well today as things are starting to separate a bit. And the Gophers have their work cut out for them today. Much more to come. Hour number two in the zone.
You're in the zone with Trent Tucker and Dave Sinekin on The Fan.
Straight up 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. You're in the zone on The Fan. Tucker and Sinekin hanging out for another hour. When we are done, Beyond the Pond takes over. Faunless, Micheletti, and whoever else may join them this week to talk puck from 10 to noon. And then it's Wild Hockey on the home of the Wild, 100.3 FM, The Fan. The Gophers will be heard on our sister station, the old fan frequency, AM 1130. Gophers, Michigan State, 1 o'clock tip from the Breslin Center. And let's talk some Big Ten hoops, Trent. Back in November, I think, I made the decision to plan a road trip to go watch an IU game with my son Jackson. We did it a couple years ago for the Michigan game. Indiana got waxed. But I'm fortunate enough to have access and able to get courtside seats underneath the basket.
Wow, big time.
Yep, so we made plans to go see Indiana, Ohio State. The time I made my plans, Indiana was ranked. They had taken down Marquette, Louisville, Butler, and with Romeo Langford, the phenom, looked like it was going to be a magical season for Indiana. Even Ohio State was off to a really nice start. So I was pretty jazzed. So let's fast forward. I'm getting on a plane today with son Jackson to head down to Bloomington. The game's at noon our time tomorrow, on CBS. And Indiana's 4-8 in the Big Ten. They've dropped 8 of their last 9, save for the remarkable win over Michigan State last Saturday. Ohio State is no better. But how's this for a daily double? So we're going to the game tomorrow, coming back Sunday night. I had to travel to Wisconsin for business first part of next week. And my client Madison is a Badger season ticket holder, so we arranged our meetings around that game. So Tuesday night, I'll take on Wisconsin hosting Michigan State.
Oh, wow.
At the Kohl Center. I had a pretty nice little daily
double.
It's a good
trip for you, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be kind of fun. Let's talk about the Big Ten, because we talked a little bit about the Gophers situation early in the show. They've dropped 2 straight. Tough to beat Wisconsin twice in a season after surprising them at Kohl Center. Both teams were really ice cold the other night, but Gophers just could not get anything to drop. They've dropped a couple in a row, and now, as I mentioned, the unenviable situation of heading to the Breslin Center to face a Spartans team that a week and change ago, we're 9-0 in the Big Ten. Now they're 9-3 after a couple of road losses, including at Illinois the other night, coming off the loss at home to the Hoosiers, where, to me, whatever happens the rest of the year, that was the most unexpected result. Indiana, 7 straight losses, goes into East Lansing, and thank you, Michigan State, for going 8-for-22 from the free throw line, because that was the reason.
8-for-22?
Yes, that's why Indiana won that game.
And you mean 3-point line, right?
No. I do not. I mean free throws. 8-for-22. And I don't know how many 1-and-1 front ends they missed. They couldn't make free throws. And actually, Indiana had a chance to win that game in regulation, didn't get a good shot at the buzzer. Goes to overtime, and I'm thinking, all right, that no chance now that it's in overtime. We had our opportunity, but there they go. They just somehow. And they play without Juwan Morgan. Really, their best player hurt his shoulder in the first half and did not return. So the idea that Indiana, losers of seven straight, would go into East Lansing and beat that team without their best player, to me, is one of the most remarkable accomplishments, as bad a season as Archie Miller and Indiana's had. So Indiana hosts Ohio State tomorrow. Gophers at Michigan State. The Spartans now 9-3 and suddenly looking up at Michigan and Purdue in the Big Ten. It's a tough spot for the Gophers, Trent. Let's face it. An angry, frustrated Michigan State team with the 79 champs in the house to celebrate the 40th anniversary. And the Gophers searching for answers. Now, I'd love to see them send Michigan State to their fourth straight loss. But this one, to me, could get ugly really quick.
Well, I think when you're facing a team that has lost their last three games, they don't feel real good about themselves right at the start. And you're going to have to come out and get off to a good start and see if you can put them back on their heels early. Now, if you allow Michigan State to come out and set the tone, get out, pressure you with their defense, turn the ball over, get out and get some easy baskets, now that crowd gets into the game, their confidence begins to grow, but then things could become tough for you. You know, the Gophers have to take care of the basketball for one, get to the offensive glass if the shots are not going in, but somehow, some way, someone is going to have to step up and knock down some open shots, because the open shots will be there for them. And you just have to trust yourself, you know, that when the offense provides 18, 19, 20-foot jump shot for you, you have to step up and take it.
And we know the outside shooting has been the Achilles heel for this team. Big story in the paper today on the lack of production from three-point range. You were at the Wisconsin game.
I was there.
I saw you. You were on TV quite often. I'll just say, you know, next time you're going to have those, you know, rafters, hanging jersey alum seats up on the front row like that.
Let you know.
You might you just might want to shave.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were a little scruffy.
Hey,
usually
it happens.
Nice,
yeah,
but you're a little scruffy.
Semi-retired, you know. Hey, you know.
Definitely allowed. From that awesome vantage point, what bothered you about what you saw in that game against the Wisconsin Badgers?
Well, you know, I just, you know, we're outside shooting for one. You know, that's something that I believe in today's game is a real key, and you have to have guys who trust and believe in themselves that they can step up and knock it down. But, you know, to help players, you know, find their confidence with inside the offense, you have to understand where your shots are coming from, you know, especially in a tight basketball game like that the other night against the Badgers. And you don't want to force yourself into a situation where you take a bad shot that can hurt your team. You know, but understand that if a play is called for you, if the shot is not there, there has to be a second and third option to find a shot for someone else. Trust the offense, trust yourself, step up and take the shot, and just believe that you can knock him down.
Where are you on the Brad Davison play?
I was blocked out, so I didn't see it, but I've heard about it time and time again. And if everything that I heard, and if he was trying to do this intentionally, you know, it's time for the Big Ten to step up and do something.
To me, it had Grayson Allen written all over it. And look, I like the kid's play. I've seen him play a couple times because I tend to go to a Wisconsin game every year. And he's done a really nice job with that program. And, you know, Maple Grove kid, you know, gets away from here, goes to Wisconsin, has had a great opportunity. And much has been made earlier this season about all the charges he takes, right? That maybe it's a flop, but he puts himself in a position to try to get charge calls. And
I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Me too. I mean, yeah. If it's an obvious flop, that's one thing. But you know what? If he's going to take the pain, and
yeah.
It's all good.
I have no problem with that.
What he did Wednesday night, there is no place in college basketball for, and he needs to be, to me, it's a suspension. I know the Gophers have asked the Big Ten to look at it. I don't know how you look at that and not call something flagrant, some technical, some suspension. Trent, who was the guy that had the wide stance on the MSP airport, the political guy? That's what he did. He had a stance where his feet were about as far wide as they could be to ensure that Jordan Murphy would land on him and, you know, maybe gets hurt. You know, something.
Oh, for sure.
It was so beyond basketball, and it's dirty.
That's a dangerous play.
It's ridiculous. And you know what? You don't need to do that, Brad Davison. And he needs to not only be held accountable, he needs to be disciplined for that, because if he's not, he's going to figure he can get away with it, you know, and it's a really bad look for the Maple Grove kid.
It's a bad look for anyone to put themselves in that situation, because, you know, It's a physical game. It's a contact game. And we all know that injuries are a part of the game. But when you go out with an intent to hurt someone, you know, that's a bad sign. I could tell you with some of the guys that I played with and against, you know, 25, 30 years ago, and if that took place with one of them, they would say, okay, all right, you're going to do that? You know, and the other guy that's guarding him, they would say, hey, Trent, you know, let him drive to the basket. I got something for him. let him beat you off to the dribble, and I meet him at the rim. But in today's game, they don't do that.
No. Well, and, you know, if you do that, you get nailed for the revenge factor.
Right, but that's okay. But you're going to send a message to him.
Yeah.
You know, that what you just did, you know, that's not acceptable.
The Badgers will head to Ann Arbor today in the Big Ten game of the weekend. Wisconsin 9-3, a game behind Michigan, who sits atop the Big Ten now at 10-2. Earlier this season, Michigan lost by 10 at Wisconsin. So a bit of revenge on the Wolverines' mind. And I do like their chances today to knock Bucky down.
You think so?
A peg or two. Yep.
I look at Michigan's team. You know, Beilein doesn't go deep into his bench. Plays about what, 6-7 guys, maybe 8 on a consistent basis. I just don't know how they win. I just don't see a ton of talent. You know, at Michigan.
Well, that Brazakis kid, that freshman.
But somehow, some way, you know, John Beilein has done a wonderful job with the University of Michigan. And, you know, to me, he's one of the top coaches in all of college basketball. But when I look at that team from top to bottom, I just don't see the type of talent that has kept them in the top 10.
Well, they don't have, you know, a lottery-type player, but Charles Matthews has been a really nice player for them, and this Brazakis kid from Canada, he's streaky, but he can throw up 30 on you in a heartbeat. But at Chrysler today, revenge game.
Are they at Chrysler? I thought they were in Madtown.
No, this one's in. I'm pretty sure this one's in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
They lost at Kohl Center earlier.
Oh, okay.
So Michigan at 10-2 sits atop the Big Ten. Suddenly, right behind them, winners of 7 straight game, the Purdue Boilermakers at 9-2, and you know they were 2-2 and kind of shuffling along, and they haven't lost since. The Gophers obviously had a chance against them last weekend with a double digit lead early in the second half, and then Matt Harms and Carson Edwards and company woke up in a big way. I've never seen a game flip as fast as that. But we got to give Matt Painter, and much as I hate to do it as an IU guy,
he's done a nice job with that program.
He has. And when you've got probably the preseason player of the year, you know, maybe Ethan Happ, maybe Carson Edwards, but senior, been a terrific scorer for that program. We always talk about teams that advance in March usually have that guard that can run a game, and they've got that. The best one in the Big Ten, and Carson Edwards, for my money. That Purdue team, they showed some gut against the Gophers. They've won 7 straight, and they put themselves in a position to be right there with the two Michigan schools.
Are they 9-3?
They are 9-2.
9-2. What are the Badgers?
They are 9-3. Yep.
I mean, and when you look at the Badgers and you look at top to bottom overall talent wise, and you ask yourself the same question: mm-hmm. How is this team 9-3 in the Big Ten? And when many people say that the Big Ten, perhaps, is the best conference in college basketball.
It's the deepest, I think, for sure. I think
is that the best?
I think it probably is the best this year. I mean, ACC is always going to be in the conversation.
Because of Duke?
Duke and Virginia.
And
I mean,
Carolina?
Those two
teams. Where's Carolina at this year?
They're pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
But you've got Syracuse, you've got Louisville. I mean, that conference has got so many great basketball schools now. And Matt mentioned it earlier, Duke-Virginia 2 happens today. That first game was fantastic, and now they go at it again, I think, in Charlottesville in what should be a terrific game today. But there's sort of been a line, the Big Ten, and the Gophers kind of straddle that line. You've got Michigan, Purdue, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Maryland, all with 4 losses or less. Iowa, 7-5, and that team is, they're tough, man. I mean, I watched them take care of IU in Bloomington the other night. Garza, their big guy, was in foul trouble, couldn't do anything, hardly played. And yet they still were in control, mainly by Cook, who's a really tough inside player. And Jordan Bohannon he's got to be the best three-point shooter in the league. This guy gets off his shot in a microsecond. Indiana was in his face, and he just gets that shot off. He had close to 30 points in that game.
Wow.
That Iowa team is also a tough one. The Gophers are right behind them in the standings.
Well, you know, the Hawkeyes is a team that can run hot and cold.
Yeah,
it's a streaky team. And watching them play against the Gophers a few games ago mm-hmm. here, you know, they were lacking on the defensive end. You know, they can put up some numbers for sure on the offensive end, but for them to make a, you know, a deep run come Big Ten tournament time, you know, they will have to become a much stronger defensive team down the stretch.
Yeah, that is where they are lacking for sure. But they've got a nice complement of players, and when Garza can stay on the court, that gives them a really nice big guy as well who can play inside, outside. All right, we'll step away. Come back. Let's talk about Maya Moore's decision when we come back, as well as the all-star rosters, which were set via the draft this week. I want to get Trent's thoughts on that as well. Much more Hoops Talk coming up in the Zone.
You're in the Zone on the Fan.
We are back, 9:19 on a Saturday morning. You're in the Zone. Tucker and Sinekin hanging out till 10, catching up on the week in hoops. Lots of trade deadline talk, some Wolves talk, Big Ten talk, and we'll continue the NBA conversation. But I want to switch for a moment to the big WNBA news of the week, Trent. It had been reported a couple weeks ago and then confirmed in an article penned by Maya Moore in the Players Tribune earlier this week that she will indeed step away from pro basketball in 2019, no yet confirmation beyond this season. Maybe she doesn't even know, although I know she has recently signed a multi-year deal with the Lynx. But just to quote a line from her own story in the Players Tribune earlier this week, she wrote, "My focus in 2019 will not be on professional basketball, but will instead be on the people in my family, as well as on investing my time in some ministry dreams that have been stirring in my heart for many years." Not unprecedented, but certainly very unusual for a player, you know, considered to be, you know, as good as anybody in the league, certainly an all WNBA player and one of the great all-time players who has led the Lynx to multiple championships, to step away from the game at the height of her career. We've seen a few players do this. Obviously, Michael Jordan did it for whatever reasons. Barry Sanders did it. But you got to go back a ways. This kind of thing doesn't happen. And from a human being standpoint, you got to salute her for following her heart. And what's important to her right now in her life is obviously something outside of basketball. But for a Lynx organization, a very tough thing. Obviously, when their leader and the woman most responsible for the multiple banners hanging at Target Center to step away, it's a difficult situation for the Lynx. Where do they go from here, and how do they react and pivot and try to get back to where they're used to being after last year's disappointing season?
Well, it's tough when you lose one really, really good player. And it becomes even tougher when you lose your best player. You know, and so in the last year or so, the Lynx have lost Lindsey Whalen and Maya Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And those types of players are very difficult to replace. You know, but you know, as all the things you just mentioned, I agree with. You know, she has made a decision that it is time to step away from basketball to do some personal things for herself. I'm a huge Maya Moore fan. And when you talk about a player who brought it every single night, someone who could perform at clutch time, you know, you can't find anyone better, you know, at her level. But at some point in time, you have to do what's best for you. And I think she's making that decision for her at this time. But for sure, it's going to be a huge hole, a huge gap, you know, for the Lynx to fill.
Yeah, and obviously, we wish her the best. And you cannot second guess at any time someone making a decision that they feel in their heart is what they need to do as a person. And so I give her credit for stepping away from the money and understanding what she needs to do as a human being. So we wish her the best.
She's had a long career. She's played a ton of basketball, because when you look at when they have to go overseas and play, it's a long season for them. And then once that season ends, you know, most of the women don't have any downtime before the WNBA season starts.
Did she play internationally?
She did.
Okay.
She played in China or somewhere in Asia. It may have been China. I think it was in China she played, or Japan, somewhere over there.
Right.
You know, she was a huge star. You know, but it's a long season over there, and by the time that season ended, you know, you might get a week, maybe 10 days off, you know, before you have to go into training camp, you know, for the WNBA season. So there was no real time to recoup and have an off season to get your mind and body back together. But, you know, I told you before, and you heard it through Jeff Van Gundy was talking about Glenn Taylor last night.
Yes.
Has been a Hall of Fame WNBA owner, you know, but the one thing that Glenn Taylor has had, with the Lynx, he was able to find the best players. With the Wolves, you know, throughout his time, he hasn't found that yet.
And let's not also forget what Cheryl Reeve has meant to this organization, too, because you can have terrific players, but you have to have the right coach and GM to fill in the holes around the superstars and get them all to play at their best. So
yeah, I mean, you know, so
I'll give him credit for it.
I heard that too. Comment, but you know, but Glenn Taylor has put the resources in, you know, with the players that they have been able to go out and pick up. Maybe they were never in a situation where they were able to get the best players, you know, but he has spent the money to try to make this team better. But when you're able to get Simone Augustus and Maya Moore, and then you bring in Lindsay Whalen, you know, you're going to find some success for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be an interesting season for the Lynx. Obviously, the hope is always to get back to the finals. But when you're dealing without your best player, yeah, goals have to be reassessed. And it'll be interesting to see how the Lynx pivot and play this year without the heart and soul of their team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talented players still. Obviously, Foles is still there. Augustus, there's still some talented players. But Maya Moore is going to go down as one of the great women players.
Perhaps could be
ever.
Be the best ever.
College, pro. You think of Cheryl Swoops. You think of Cheryl Miller. You know,
yeah.
Rebecca Lobo. There have been some great ones.
But
she's in the conversation.
I haven't seen anyone that could do it with the flair and the style and the overall talent, you know, that Maya Moore had.
Yeah, I'm going to put Cheryl Miller in that same class.
If there's one that's on that level, I would say for sure. No, but Maya Moore was she was fun to watch.
And hopefully, you know, if she wants to, she'll come back and play in a year or 2 years. She's what, 29? So you have to think if she wants to, she can still play in this league. And let's not forget, it's not like they're walking away from NBA type contracts here. I mean, the WNBA players are not compensated.
They made really good money. You know,
overseas
for sure.
Yes, WNBA is. Well, the season just ended, so I think she got paid for this year, wherever she was.
That's right, yeah.
So she's walking away from WNBA money.
Oh, okay.
That's a pittance.
But she was able to get her a seven-figure contract overseas.
Yes, okay. I think that one, the checks will cash.
Okay.
One final break. Come back. Final segment. We'll talk all-star rosters and swing back to some NBA conversation when we return in the Zone on the Fan.
You're in the Zone with Dave Sinekin and Trent Tucker on the Fan. We are back, 9:32 on a Saturday morning. You're in the Zone with Trent Tucker, Dave Sinekin. Final segment before we make way for Beyond the Pond for all your puck talk today, leading you into Wild. Is it Blackhawks? Did you say, Trent? Who are the Wild got today?
The Wild are going to be playing the New Jersey Devils on
an
East Coast trip.
The Devils. Gotcha. Where are the Devils playing in? Are they in Brooklyn? Or are they in Meadowlands still?
Well, the New Jersey Devils.
They still in Meadowlands? They didn't make the move?
I don't think so, but you're asking the wrong guy.
No, I think you're thinking of the Islanders.
The Islanders is in Nassau. You're on Nassau, right? Are they still in Nassau? Islanders?
Here, let me check.
Can we just have this conversation at the top of the hour?
I was in Nassau Coliseum, Rangers that was at Madison Square Garden. I know that the Devils used to play over in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, so the Devils are at the Prudential Center. It's in Newark.
It's in Newark. Oh, that's
actually in New Jersey.
Yeah, in New Jersey. I thought they made the move with the Nets.
So, hockey talk till noon, then Wild Hockey at 12 o'clock, Gophers basketball at 1 on our sister station, AM 1130, K-Talk. So, Giannis Antetokounmpo is your, I'd say, presumed leader for the MVP. It's a two-horse race, Giannis and James Harden. Giannis was awarded the captaincy of one of the squads, along with LeBron James, and they held their draft Thursday night, and it was televised by TNT. Did you watch that? I'm guessing that's not something.
I did not.
And it wasn't on my radar, but Son Jackson asked me to DVR it, so I ended up watching it. I'll say this. As a player, Giannis is as good as it gets. He's got his whole career in front of him. I don't think general manager is in his future, however. I think he got fleeced in the draft.
What did he take? He took Steph Curry, number one. What's wrong with that?
No, nothing wrong with that. So LeBron takes KD first, okay. and Giannis counters with Steph Curry.
Steph,
that's
right.
Obvious. LeBron then takes his guy, Kyrie Irving.
Okay. So you're saying Giannis should have taken Anthony Davis?
No, he's not a starter. He wasn't on.
He wasn't.
So he could have taken Harden. He could have taken Kawhi Leonard.
First. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you take the starters first. So in front of him at that point were Kawhi Leonard, James Harden. He instead took Joel Embiid.
What's wrong with that move?
That's okay. But
that's a great move.
It allows LeBron to counter with Kawhi Leonard.
Okay.
So there's Harden sitting there, but apparently Giannis is not a big beard guy. He's his MVP foe. He takes Paul George, who's had a terrific year.
Yeah.
But he takes Paul George ahead of James Harden.
Okay.
Which then leaves him, as LeBron takes Harden, with Kemba Walker. So, and we'll get to the reserves in a second because it gets worse. But LeBron's starting five. LeBron, Durant, Irving, Kawhi, and Harden. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Versus Giannis, Curry, Embiid, George, and Walker.
Okay, I got the best shooter in the game. I got the best low post player in the game.
Yep.
I may have the best all-around athlete on my team.
Yeah, play
Paul
with it.
George.
Yeah, that's fine.
Paul George is another, you know, all-star, all-around player.
LeBron, Durant, Kawhi, Harden, and Kyrie.
Who's going to pass the ball in their team?
Anybody can pass it to anybody. Yeah. Anybody can score. Now, they don't have size. Yeah, obviously.
I know. It's just for fun.
I know. That starting five, though, it's, to me, heavily weighted to LeBron. So then Giannis gets the first pick for the reserves.
Okay.
It's kind of like when LeBron is coming out in the draft and you run your envelope up to... Giannis should have run his envelope up to the podium and said, Anthony Davis, please, thank you very much, I'll sit down now. He didn't take Anthony Davis. He had to make his teammate happy.
There you go.
He took Chris Middleton.
Right.
Which allows LeBron to counter with Anthony Davis.
Okay.
Giannis is up. Who's the best guy left? I'll say Klay Thompson.
What do you think?
The Joker.
Giannis is going big.
He went big and he went international because he also took Vucevic with Kat still on the board. So LeBron ends up with, on his bench, Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, Kat, LaMarcus Aldridge. This has blowout written all over it.
Oh, no.
Blowout written all over it.
Yeah, you got the best shooter in the game in Steph Curry. And Joel Embiid. And Giannis.
Yeah, I know what they got. So then the fun part was, as they're picking their benches, Giannis took Ben Simmons with his third pick. And LeBron physically gave one of those, like when you're in fantasy football and you're about to take, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and somebody swipes him in front of you. LeBron had that look on his face like, oh, that's my guy. So they go to commercial break after the rosters are selected, and LeBron goes, I want to make a trade. I'm requesting a trade, and Ernie and Charles and Kenny are all like, can we do that? We'll allow it. I guess we'll allow it. And LeBron offers up Russ Westbrook for Ben Simmons. Now, Westbrook was drafted a couple of picks after Ben Simmons. But Giannis, what's he going to say, right? I mean, he could have said, all right, well, throw me back Kat, you know, we got a deal. He could have said sweeten the offer since Simmons was drafted ahead of Russ, but he went ahead and accepted the trade. So now Russ and Embiid are on the same team. That could be kind of fun to watch as they've had some flare-ups when they've played each other. But a trade was then orchestrated, which just made for good TV. And we talked about
this. Tampering was thrown out
there as well when I think when LeBron selected AD, I think Giannis asked if that was tampering, which was a pretty good line. We talked about it last year when this was not televised. It was, why wouldn't you show this? Are you that concerned that Bradley Beal is going to be the last pick and he's going to get all upset and it's embarrassing?
No, it's an All-Star game.
Right. So, and he was the last pick, as it turned out. The ratings were boffo, as you can expect, compared to last year's roster reveal where they just, the studio guys just announced the teams. This made for a great 10 or 15 minutes of basketball of excitement. And again, it's just picking players. But just seeing LeBron and Giannis in a different role, Giannis sitting there with a paper scratching out names as players are being drafted, it just, I don't know, it brought it down to kind of a human level. And I think it's overall a great move by the league to just make this fun little exercise public and let the fans watch these guys pick the players they want. Mm-hmm. And yeah, on paper, to me, LeBron starting five looks ridiculous, but that doesn't mean they're going to play well together. And maybe, you know, having the well-rounded, more traditional lineup that Giannis has will...
Giannis is going big.
But to not take AD as your first guy off the bench. And then, of course, when they had the two ceremonial players...
Well, the joke is this team is what? First or second in the West?
They are second right now.
Right?
Correct.
Giannis is first in the West.
East.
In East, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State is first in the West. So he's got, you know... The top three teams in basketball, he's got two of those guys on his team.
Right. Well, so does LeBron with Durant and Clay. I mean, you can play that game if you want.
Yeah.
But it's all in good fun. But the game's next week.
Joker and Steph are perhaps the best two players on their team.
Excuse me?
Perhaps.
The Joker?
Joker on their teams.
Oh, on their teams?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say the Joker's the best player in Denver?
Yes, for sure.
And Steph could easily be the best player on his team?
Yes. Well, okay. There'll be part of the audience will go with KD.
Joel, best player on his team?
Yeah, again, some will take Ben Simmons. Whatever. It's on paper, I think most would side with me on this. The LeBron starting lineup looks a lot more...
Is it because of the name factor?
Fearsome. Well, it's not just name factor, Trent. You put LeBron, Kawhi, Harden, KD, and Irving on a team. That's insane.
And you take those other guys that you just named on the Eastern side.
Curry and Giannis are the only two guys that... You know,
Joel?
He's not in that same class to me as those other
guys. Joel. Yeah. Best big man in the game.
If you're going to put the 10 guys together, to me, Embiid's eighth among those 10 guys.
Well, he's in top 10, right?
Well, yeah.
Okay, obviously. There you go.
Obviously. I think Kemba...
Where's Paul George at? This year, yeah,
he's in the conversation.
Okay,
I mean, OKC is 35-19.
There you go. And only team they can't beat are the Wolves.
That's correct. The one team they cannot beat.
So the Wolves should play Oklahoma City at least 40 times. Then you saying?
One trade we didn't talk about because it doesn't involve a big time player, but I want to get your thoughts on it. Is Houston is still trying to get in the conversation right now? They are fifth in the West at 32-22. And Harden's doing crazy Harden things. But they added Iman Shumpert at the trade deadline, kind of round
up.
Nice
pickup for them.
Yeah, don't you think?
Good defensive player.
I thought so too.
Solid defensive player. You know, he can step out and knock down a 3-point shot. I thought that was a really good move and good pickup by the Rockets.
I thought so too. Kind of a sneaky, small little play that he's one of those guys that come playoff time and they're in the Western Conference semifinals and, you know, let's say Houston's playing OKC. And Shumpert's having a game, and you're going, God, I forgot they got him.
You know? The team that could make that final playoff spot in the West could be Sacramento.
They're just a game or two out right now, and
Harrison Barnes is going to be a nice addition for them.
They let Ben McLemore go, and Harrison Barnes takes that spot
for sure because the kid coming out of Kansas, he never lived up to the promise.
Yeah, top 10 pick for sure. Yeah, you're right. Sacramento's a team that. It seems like they've been lost for so many years.
They got some talent, man.
And they draft guys like this year. They drafted Marvin Bagley. And
Bagley's a really nice player.
But they could have had Doncic. I mean, they took Bagley, you know, I think, if my order's correct. I mean, if they had drafted a little better over the last 3 years, they could be really good right now. And as it is, they seem to have turned a corner.
Well, I mean, you know, they're starting to gel together. I think Jaeger's doing a very good job of putting guys in positions where they can be successful. You know, they get up and down the floor. You know, Buddy Hield has taken his game to another level in his second season.
Yeah.
Fox is...
He's a stud.
He's going to be a true star for sure. And they have a number of guys who can just play off each other. They play fast. They play free. They play together. They like playing with one another. You know, if they can stay healthy, like you said, and add a few more pieces here or there over the next two or three or four years, they could be a consistent playoff team.
Yeah, they'll be fighting the Clippers and Lakers probably for that eighth spot. And with the Clippers shipping off Tobias Harris, the Lakers...
Well, the Lakers keep LeBron James as it is. Before LeBron James went down, the Lakers found themselves in the number four spot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay? Just like when Jimmy Buckets went down last year, our Wolves were in the number four spot.
That's right.
So with LeBron James and with the Western Conference not being as strong between, let's say, 4-9, 4-10, you know, the Lakers are in that mix to make a run to get to the fourth spot.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw it after the blowout loss in Indiana. They go into Boston and beat them, right?
Yeah.
They still show signs of being a challenger for the 7 or 8 spot. It's remarkable what the Spurs are doing at 32-25 with that roster without DeJounte Murray. And maybe Pop's last season. There's been some rumors that this might be it for him.
Who's going to take over, Becky Hammon?
Yeah, maybe. They've lost their other big assistants to other teams, right? She very well. I think she will be the first woman head coach, and it would not be surprising to see the Spurs be the team to do it. I think she would be in line to follow up on Pop. But it's remarkable with that roster that they're 7 games above 500 playing in that conference against all that competition. It's
They have an all-star and low post player in LaMarcus Aldridge.
You know, DeMar DeRozan.
DeRozan has been good for them. Rudy Gay has been consistently good for them when he's healthy. So he has given them a nice spark, especially on the offensive end. And when they shoot the ball well from downtown, they become a tough team to deal with. You know, but the missing piece for the San Antonio Spurs is a quality starting point guard. I'm hoping that the young kid can come back, you know, off the ACL he tore.
I think so, yeah. So,
yeah, if he can come back next year and be strong and develop, you know, he's going to give them a solid point guard for many more years to come. But if they cannot find that solid point guard over the next few years, they're always going to be somewhere in that 6th, 7th, and 8th spot in the Western Conference.
Final 8 to 10 minutes for us. Let's go back where we started, Trent, and start with the Wolves, who lost their 4th straight game last night. That was an 0-3 road trip. And really, to me, it was a season-defining road trip.
It was a very disappointing road trip.
Yeah, you go into this trip down, 1 game under 500. You're playing Orlando, Memphis, and New Orleans, 3 teams that you expect to beat if you're serious about being a playoff team.
Two teams not trying to win, right?
Correct. 2 would just as soon lose, and you couldn't get a win. Now, I'm not really going to fault this organization right now because they don't have a point guard. I mean, they're playing so shorthanded without, you know, Teague returned in a limited fashion last night.
You have to fault them. You have to.
Well, but...
You go into Memphis who is not trying to win. Come on, you're 19 down the first quarter with your best 2 players on the floor? It's unacceptable.
However, without Teague and Rose and Jones and Covington, they're shorthanded right now.
You got
Luol Deng playing 30 minutes.
No Marc Gasol.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't have Gasol.
Okay, and they're playing guys who we haven't even heard of.
Seriously, I didn't know half the guys were in the NBA.
And we have Anthony Towns, who's an all-star, and Andrew Wiggins, our best 2 players.
Yeah, they're healthy.
And we're down by 19.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
It's not like, can't give you a pass on that one.
All right, I understand what you're saying, but they are considerably shorthanded at the point guard position. And even Jared Bayless is hurt now, which caused Isaiah Kanan on a 10-year contract to start and play 31 minutes last night. And it's tough to win in the NBA when you have one position that's completely wiped out. And yes, Teague came back and played 17 minutes and actually looked pretty good after missing a lot of games. But this team now at 25-30 is out of the playoff picture. I know you're saying they're 4 games out of 8th and all that.
Hey, we're still in it.
They're not going to win 20 of their last 25 games. They're just not. And it's a lot of
four games out, right?
They're 4 games out, but there's like 4 teams in front of them for the 8th spot. And if you get the 8th spot, what does that do for you to play 4 more games against Golden State?
Oh yeah, when you've been out of the playoffs out of 14-15 years? Yeah, that's a bonus. That helps. As a player, yes, I want to make the playoffs.
Well, sure, as a player, right. Of course you do.
So those guys are playing the game. Players are playing the game, for sure, yes. You know, there's no need now to say that the season is over just because I'm 4 games out of the 8th spot. And we still have, how many games left to be played?
25.
25. A lot of games left.
27, to be exact.
That's a ton of games left to be played.
Only Phoenix and Memphis and New Orleans by half a game are behind the Wolves in the West.
Okay, so who's
They're basically closer to the bottom than they are to the
top. So who's in front of the Wolves?
Right now. You want me to go through the entire West?
Just
that eighth spot?
Yeah.
So the Clippers right now have the eighth spot at 30-26.
Were they going to fall?
Sacramento is a half game behind them at 29-26.
Okay.
The Lakers are 28-27.
And the Wolves are...
And Dallas is 25-29.
And the Wolves are 25-30.
Right. You got four teams in front of you for the eighth spot.
But come on.
You're not passing those four teams.
You could. I mean, we're not talking about the Golden State Warriors that we were trying to catch when we were four games behind.
Are you being serious right now?
I am being serious. Because those
teams...
Has this
team shown you anything?
All those teams in front of you can have a bad week or 10 days.
The Wolves could go 20-7.
And all of a sudden the Wolves can win.
And they're 45-37. They're still not in it.
It could get in it. Because all these other guys that you are talking about, you have to look at this from a player standpoint. Okay? Not just from, a fan standpoint. Look, it's a player standpoint. Right. Four games out with 27 games to go. I still believe I got a chance to make it. 1982. Two games out with four to go.
How many teams in front of you?
Got to go on the road. Haven't won in Michigan in 20 years. Okay? Two games out with four to go. Everyone is writing us off. Can't get it done.
It's a slightly different situation.
But you got to go to Michigan where you hadn't won in 20 years. Beat the Wolverines. Illinois does us a favor. They knock off the Hawkeyes in Champaign. We got to go to Iowa City one game out. Okay? Tough place to play. They're closing the field house after this game. There are no Gopher fans anywhere in sight. We got to go here and win this basketball game. If we take the mindset that things are over, we don't win the Big Ten championship.
This is such an apples and pineapples conversation.
No, because when you got 27 games to go and you're only four games out, you still have to believe as a player that we can still make a run to get to the playoffs.
And that's fine. The players should believe it. The players should go for it. I'm just speaking from a reality standpoint. Big picture, with what this team has available right now, they're not going to go 20-7. And even that's not going
to
get them.
You may not have to go 20-7.
Really?
Because you don't know what these other guys in front of you are going to do. We're not talking about great, great teams that we are chasing. All these guys are just like us.
So if they are able to, let's say they're able to go 16-11 the rest of the way, which would be remarkable. 16-11,
but the guy,
that gets them a 41-41 season.
But think about this. The people that I'm chasing are just like me.
No, I disagree. I mean,
I'm not chasing the Golden State Warriors. I'm not chasing the Milwaukee Bucks right now.
You're not even really chasing the Clippers, they're in the eighth spot.
Okay.
You're chasing the Lakers and the Kings right now.
They know what? Those teams are beatable because you know why?
Why?
So far this season, I have shown that I can beat them. Those are the people I'm chasing.
Okay, well, last night would have been a good time to start, Trent. Going to New Orleans, playing a team that did not play Anthony Davis
in the fourth quarter. You can't give them a pass because you're supposed to be able to beat these teams when my best two players are healthy.
It was not a good night. It was a night there for the taking. Anthony Davis booed by the home fans. Even when he made the first couple buckets of the night, they were still booing him when he got to the line. He finishes with 32 in 25 minutes and does not play in the fourth quarter. It doesn't matter. Is it Tim Frazier, the former Penn State kid?
Yeah.
Looked like a real player. I mean, they had guys out there, again, off the street that had not played a lot of minutes that are playing because Mirotić got traded, and yet the Wolves could not make any hay. Cat had 32, Wiggins 23-10-7.
Yeah.
Pretty nice stat line for him. But as I mentioned, the next two players on the minutes list were Luol Deng and Isaiah Kanan with 31 minutes each. There was a time where Deng didn't off the bench for like 3 months. And how he's getting 30 minutes.
He's ready. I mean, you never know when your opportunity is going to come. So that's why as a veteran player, most guys understand they have to keep themselves prepared. Injuries, things are not going well. All of a sudden, now your name is called, so you have to be ready to go. And, Luol Deng has done a nice job so far, in the time that he's been on the floor for this team.
The Wolves will close out the pre-All-Star break season. They have the Clippers at home Monday, the Rockets at home Wednesday, and then they'll get a much-needed All-Star break, and maybe Tyus, Covington, Rose, guys come back.
It's going to have to start on the defensive end for this team.
For sure.
That's where it has to start. They have shown they can put up some points. Wiggins and Towns, have been good as of right on the offensive end, but they're going to have to dig down deep and begin to play defense. You know, you just can't let guys blow by you. You're going to have to make it tough for them. You have to get up and so they can feel your presence, challenge shots, rebound the basketball. Don't give up long, loose rebounds. Guards have to come back to the free throw line to help out the big guys. I believe that the Wolves still can make a run toward the eighth spot, but they're going to have to become a whole lot tougher on the defensive end.
And we'll agree to disagree. I think it's over, and it's lottery time.
Come on.
For your Wolves.
Come on.
Final 45 seconds. Your Gophers
have some faith in that, guys.
East Lansing to take
on downtown Minneapolis.
Spartans team that has dropped three in a row. They are 14-point underdogs. What can they do to stay in this game against an angry, frustrated Spartans team?
Gotta play a solid game. Take care of the basketball. Rebound the ball well. The Gophers are a very good offensive rebounding team. And when you go on the road in a hostile environment, you have to get some second and third chances. Effort and energy may give you a chance to knock off the Spartans.
Feels like 73-51. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you are wrong.
Enjoy your week.
You do the same, buddy.
For Trent and Trent, I am Dave. Thank you so much for listening. We're back next week at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned for Beyond the Pond and Wild Hockey. Until next Saturday, peace out.
You're listening to The Fan.